everyone. This is Gordon. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. The Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net is run every week at 9 o'clock on 146.955 repeater, operated by the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. Anyone is welcome to operate on this net as long as you have privileges to operate in the amateur radio band and or in the amateur radio bands, specifically the 2-meter amateur radio band. And I'm talking really, really fast so I can slow this down. Anyway, the purpose of the TechNet is somewhat different than other nets. It's not hypertech, but it's really, really kind of cool. And what we do here is we discuss amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computing, anything else in the way of operationalizing those things, things about our society that depend on those things, which is pretty much everything in our society. So we hope that you'll participate. We really need to know that you're out there. It makes it a lot saner to answer a question if you know there's an audience to whom you're catering your answers. Even if you're choosing not to interact after checking in, you'll probably have more of an opportunity to learn as well as to contribute. These questions are a contribution, by the way. So if there's something you've been thinking about and just don't want to ask about, well, ask about it anyway. Be a good thing. So make that contribution, as they say. So the way this works is we check in with our call sign, our name, and we then indicate whether or not we have a question, a comment, both, because you can have a question and a comment, but you have multiple questions and multiple comments, just indicate how many. And above all, well, above all, if you must, none of the above. So your call sign, your name, indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. So we're going to do this in some sort of orderly manner, what passes for order anyway. And that is going to be by starting with the call signs that begin with the letter Kilo. We haven't started with the Kilo 2s, actually. So stations whose call signs begin with Kilo, immediately followed by 2, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above, please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo.
Is 2AMI, Tony. Just a comment. And that's about it. No questions, but just a comment. Back to that.
Hey, Tony, good evening to you. Any other Kilo 2s?
This is K2DSL David, and I guess I have a comment.
Wow, very good. Good evening to you, David. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2ZO. No questions or comments at this time.
Okie doke. Good evening, James. Any other Kilo 2s? All right, all the other Kilos, come on down.
Kilo Bravo 2, Echo Sierra Echo. This is Tom. I have a question.
Okay, good evening, Tom. I got your question. Any other Kilos?
KO2, okay. Bennett, no questions or comments.
Okay, Bennett, good evening. And, I'm thinking of it. Just everybody should, if you have the current QST, because it's the November QST, you might want to grab a copy of that. So I have something in my mind about what's in there. The article about the programming of the 817. Very cool, using an IR controller. That's my question at some point. Any other Kilos? Alrighty. Let's see. How about those whiskeys?
W2JEK, Don, with a comment.
The Don, you with a comment. Got you covered. Very good. Any other whiskeys?
WE2R. Charlie, no questions or comments.
Okay, Charlie, very good. And, by the way, I saw your former colleague, Bob, the other day at church, and I'm noticing that he's running an interesting course in our church on, I think, 4 successive Wednesdays or something. I can't make it. It's at 9 in the morning, but man, it's a really interesting 4-week course he's running. It's a history course. It's a theological history course about the United States. It's interesting. Anyway, any whiskeys? Okay. November.
This is N2OEL with a great question on max gain antennas.
Okay, very good, Noel. Good evening. Any other Novembers?
This is NS2K Jim. No traffic initially.
James, good evening to you. Alrighty. How about the Alpha stations?
QXC. Question and a comment.
Okay, John, very good. I got you. Question and a comment. Good for you. Anybody else with an alpha call? Okay, any other call signs? Anybody late? Please call K2BAR. Alrighty, well, let's get on with it. Tony, your comment, sir. K2BAR.
We were discussing it on the previous end, but this weekend, probably starting tomorrow night, is the CQ Worldwide Sideband DX contest. And as Jim and David figured out, we're in Zone 8. It's what you'll need in the contest exchange. So if you want to test out your antenna or operate in the contest, you'll be competing with lots of big guns, I'm sure, but you can have some fun. Next weekend is the 6-meter sprint, but only on Saturday. I don't have the exact details on that. I'll have it for the next minute on following Thursday. And I got in the mail today a certificate from the ARRL. I was a first place winner in September 09 VHF contest, but only in the Hudson Division, Northern New Jersey section. And I had first place in 6 meters and first place in 222. So I have a new certificate with my name on it. I don't remember exactly the conditions why we didn't do that September contest. Must have been a weather problem, but I did operate from home, and I scored enough points to be ahead of anybody who didn't participate. There aren't that many participants, I'm sure. So I'm happy to get a certificate for September 09 VHF contest. Back to that.
So what place did we make, Tony?
Don't remember. I don't have the scores here.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, that sounds interesting. So the rules for the CQ Worldwide can be found at CQ... the CQMagazine.com or something like that?
Question for me, I'm sorry, I was distracted by the baseball game. It's sure you can find it on the website someplace under CQ Magazine or CQ Contest.
It's at CQWW.com.
CQ Worldwide there, CQWW.com, okay, that makes sense, CQWorldwide.com. Very good. It's an exciting contest. Basically, you can work anyone as long as they're not in the continental United States.
I'm Cobham about that, W2JK.
Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, well, you can work your own country, but you can't get any points. But you can work your own country for a country multiplier and a zone multiplier. So you figure your zones, actually, the zones are 3, 4, and 5. The 3 is the west coast, middle is the 4, and the east coast is 5. That's the way the zones are. I've been in this country for many years, and you can get them, you can't get any points out of it, but you can get it a multiplier. So there's a thing that you should do is to work these local people, even though you're not getting a point, because you get a multiplier out of it. So that's something you have to keep in mind when you run the contest. Back to net, W2JK.
Ah, okay, stay corrected. So what is the origin of the CQ zone? Did they just chop up the world in something that they thought might be geographically diverse and, you know, populated enough to make it interesting and the like, without, you know, trying to balance the geographic coverage of the planet so that no one part of the planet theory has an advantage, which I'm sure has been disproven several different ways over the years. But is that the basic concept, or is there some real logic behind this zone thing?
W2JEK, I have a 1938 handbook, an old radio handbook that has those zones in it. It's been around a long time. I don't know just why they, or how they determine these, but that's where, that's how far back it goes.
K20.
Yes, James. Thank you, Doc.
There were two sets of zones, and I think I gave the ITU zone 8. Where CQ zones are different, and I think, yeah, I think we're, Don, what are we for?
We're 5. East Coast is 5, West Coast is 3, and the middle of the country is 4.
Okay, I said 8 before, but that was the ITU zone. Sorry about that.
So which zone is in your 1938 handbook, Don? The ITU zone or the CQ zone?
Those are the CQ zones. That was something that they started way back then.
When did CQ start publishing?
I think it was Radio Magazine that was called. It was a radio magazine, it was it back then. And CQ only started around 1945 or 44 or something like that vintage. And but I think they picked up on this after the war, these zones that the radio magazine had, I think, that faltered during the wartime.
I see. Okay. Very cool. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. It really does. So I'm just kind of curious, what does, or what's on people's agenda? Who's operating this contest this weekend? Anybody want to just, let's try the kilos first in some sensible order. If we can do it by the order which you checked in, that'd be even better.
This is K2DSL. I'll be on when I'm around, which I think will be most of Friday night and all of Sunday and whenever I can on Saturday. But just 100 watts into my wire antennas, KQBAR, KQDSL.
Well, that's great. That's super. All right, anybody else with Kilo? All right, how about the Whiskies?
W2JEK, I'll be on you. I'll be trying using with the QRP, and I'll do a great score, but it's just my thing, doing my thing, and QRP. Usually on Sunday, I usually get a good chance at stuff because a lot of it's been worked over. But I'll be on other times too, just as the time fits in. You know, there's a lot going on a weekend, especially this weekend with the ghosts and the goblins. we'll be busy.
Yeah, I'm going to sit there with my garden hose on the front lawn and hose down anybody who decides to be stupid, in a word. All right. Any other whiskeys? Novembers? Okay, and Alphas. Anybody going to participate?
No, this Alpha is not.
Okay. Good, John. Alrighty. Well, sounds pretty exciting. Anything else on the topic from anyone about contesting this coming weekend or such, or before I hand it back to Tony?
KGDSL.
David, go.
My comment was going to be what Tony talked about anyway, but if anyone wants, if you actually just go to Google and do ICOM CQ Zone as your search terms, the first hit brings up a an ICOM page which has a link to a PDF document which has a great two pages, one map of the CQ zones and one map of the ITU zones, if anyone wants to see what they are. There's other ones available, but the ICOM ones are very nice. If you wanted to view them or print them out, it's a PDF file. KQBAR, KQDSL.
That's a great tip. So you Google ICOM CQ Zone. Very nice. Very, very nice. Yeah, there's a lot of good maps. They have a good grid square map and a few other things up there on their site, too. In fact, I have a couple of paper copies of that that they printed. Those are very, very nice. All right, anybody else have a comment about contests? Okay, Mr. Tony, any finals on the subject? Or you want to bring up something else before we move on?
That's about it. The only other comment is that, believe it or not, the Giants are playing the Texas Rangers tonight in the second game of the World Series. But I don't think there's too many people, probably only 100,000 or so people looking at that game.
Really? Well, when the Devils can't be in the Stanley Cup playoffs, I always want Edmonton and, like the Predators or something. Oh, dear me. I'm a bit of a social terrorist. But anyway. All righty. Let's see. Let's go to our next comment and question. Mr. Dave? KGDSL, KGBAR.
KGBAR, KGDSL. I was just going to mention that there was the contest this weekend, but Tony did a good job of doing that, so I don't have anything to add at this time. KGBAR, KGDSL.
Well, I'm going to ask you both a question. Actually, all three of you. Don's in there, too. What do you each use for logging, and what, what are your radio and antenna configurations? Let's talk about that real quick. Tony, give us the 30-second overview.
I use a pen and pencil and a logbook. I don't do nature contesting. When I do log, it's only in the VHF contest, and I use CT. I don't use a logging program other than that. Sorry.
And your radio and antennas for this contest?
For the CQ Worldwide contest, I have a 40-meter Carolina Windham and a 280-300-foot horizontal loop that I tune to the other bands. 40-meter Windham doesn't work well on 80, of course, but it works on all the other bands. And the big loop, I can resonate on any band. And I run 100 watts usually. Don't usually run an amplifier for most of my operation.
Okay, very good. And that's interesting. So, modest antenna by any measure, but good ones. David?
I have a Kenwood TS-2000 that runs 100 watts, and I normally use a G5RV wire antenna, but last weekend, Richard K2ZB and I put up a 3-band dipole for 2015 and 10, so I'll probably use that on those bands, and use the G5RV on 40 and 80. And I log with N1MM, which is connected to my radio, so it knows the frequency. And if I happen to operate assisted with the DX cluster that has all that coming in as well. I probably won't operate, I don't know. I'll decide whether I operate assisted or not. And then it logs it all for me, so it knows the frequency and the time and all that, and I just log the call sign and the exchange. So I think for this contest, if I enter the call sign and hit space, it'll pre-populate it based on the call sign associated to what zone they're in. Of course, it isn't always right, so you still have to pay attention and log the right zone, especially if folks are portable or traveling. And it's not always 100% right, even if it matches the zone. So like N2BJ as an example might show as 5 when he's really a 4, just because his call sign is N2 when he's really in Chicago. So you still have to pay attention, but it works that way. And let me drop aside one more comment.
Okay, go ahead.
One of the things that happens after the contest is, depending on who's running the contest and what, they sometimes ask for volunteers to help for the paper logs that are sent in to turn them into logs. So there's a pretty handy program that we use, and I volunteered for a bunch of different contests to take in the paper logs that come in and log them, so they're all electronically, so they can all go through the log checking program. So I know that Don logs through paper, not to steal what he's going to say. And if Tony actually sends his log in, then it'll eventually get to somebody like me who will enter it on their behalf into the computer forum, so then send it back to the contest folks so they can put it all through their logging program. KQVAR, KQDSL.
Excellent. Any comments or questions for David? I have one for you, David. How do you like N1MM overall?
Well, first, probably which matters a lot to a lot of people, it's free. So there's no cost at all to using it. It's updated constantly, usually a couple times a month with bug fixes, enhancements, changes to all the contest rules. I know that Phil, WH2LXC, uses WriteLog, which is his other fine program, and it's got a nominal fee, I think, $30. There's a tremendous, tremendous number of features in N1MM, which I probably use maybe at most 5% of all the features that are in there. And I use it for both CW, RIDI, and phone. So there's tons of things it can do, but for me, you know, just as a single op and not the high-powered station, I'm lucky if I get, even if I'm calling CQ, if I get, you know, 40 calls an hour, I don't need all the features that are in there and all the tricks and bells and whistles. But it's got them all if you're willing to learn them and deal with them. KQVAR, KQDSL.
Very good. Very good. Good advice all around. Anybody else?
You, JK.
Mr. Don, I was going to go to you next, but okay, there you go. Your station, sir.
Okay. I have a 40-meter dipole that works on 15 meters. I have a 20-meter ground plane. I have an end-fed wire. It's 110 feet long that will work on 10 meters, will work on 80 meters, work on 160. WARC bands as well, and provides a random receiving antenna for all kinds of frequencies from below the broadcast band up into the whatever. But, so I always have the availability of four bands, 15 and 40, 20, and whatever the long wire is tuned to. Like daytime, I'd say in a contest situation, I'd have that tuned to 10 meters. At night, it'd be probably 80 meters or maybe on 160, depending on the conditions. I might want to get a multiplier by working somebody on 160 meters. And, of course, it's all controlled by a switch, so I just go click, click, click from one to the other. And of course, I have to use a tuner on the long wire. And I know exactly what the settings are there, so I don't have to go cranking, looking, and playing games with the SWR meter. As far as logging goes, I do use a paper log, but I paper log on the log forms that the contest sponsor has. The TQ has a log forms on their website. I log on them, and then they have a website you pull up. Let me try for a minute. They have a website you pull in. I think it's W7VNM. I'm not quite sure the call is in there. And what you do is you go in there, you type in your log, and your what they ask for, and that converts it into a Cabrillo log, and that Cabrillo log is then sent to the sponsor, in this case CQ Magazine, and you get W7VNM sends you a copy of your log back, and then you also get an email, and then you also get back a confirmation with a confirmation number from the CQ sponsor from their machinery. So that's how I handle this, because that way they get their log right away. You know they got it right away, and it saves Phil Barber from trying to make it into Cabrillo or somebody else. So that's what I do with my logging. Back to that W2JK.
Isn't that always a question? Alrighty. Anybody have any follow-on questions for Don? Don, I have one. What was your ring again?
Oh, my radio is a Yaesu FT840, and I usually run that at 5 watts for contests.
Very good. Alrighty. Anything else? Okey-doke. That was interesting. All right, our next question comes from KB2ESE. Tom?
I'm kind of new to ham radio and HF. I was wondering if what would be a recommended... What do operators use for headphones? And if anybody has any comments or recommendations for different types of headphones. KQBAR, KQBSE.
Wow, you're going to get into religious work too, huh? Well, there's definitely many, many tastes and thoughts on that subject. Let's ask a couple of questions. And the answer is maybe several different kinds, depending on what you're doing. So what is it you plan to do with these headphones, and what kind of radio are you planning to place them?
I have an ICOM IC7000. The purpose of the headphone would be a different way of listening to the radio without a speaker, so nobody else gets disturbed.
Can you be operating from home or in a car or field day, or what's the scoop?
I'd be operating mostly from home. Back to that.
Alrighty. Well, if you want something super lightweight and you don't have to cover your ears, you know, there's a number of lightweight headsets out there. Some are, you know, just repurposed, iPod headsets, you know, but with a headband, or, you know, Walkman vintage headsets. You know, they have a little headband. Some people use earbuds even. And that's all good. If you want a boom microphone, well, several out there, Heil being the most prominent, but there are several others. Is it W2EMY? Is it sells a one-ear and two-ear headset? That's pretty lightweight. Got decent microphone characteristics. And yeah, you just have to do the antenna adapter. I mean, the microphone adapter thing. But other than that, you'll be fine. I have a Heil Pro Set and a Heil Pro Set Plus. The Pro Set's a little lighter. It's only got one cartridge in it. I have the DX cartridge in there. And then, and it covers my ears, but it's small. relatively small, and then they have a ProSet Plus, which is a bit more spheroidal and has two cartridges, a nice smooth conversational cartridge and a EX cartridge for when you need that extra punch. So that's what I use. Anybody else have some thoughts on this, please call K2BAR.
Comment K2DSL.
Hey, David.
For RIDI contests, I just use earbuds like you would use on a regular, as Gordon said, a Walkman. I don't need quality of audio or really able to hear anything other than that I'm hearing anything is enough, because you tune it based on the display on your computer. But I use ProSets. One of the reasons is I happen to have my radio and where I operate in an end of the family room, so there's usually other noise that's going on, so I like having bigger headsets that cover my ears. Plus everyone seems to like the Heil mic, so I'm sure there's just as many people that say for one quarter of the price there's a mic that sounds just as good. But I use the Heil ProSet, and even before I did that, just the stock mic that came with the Kenwood TS-2000, everybody said sounded great, good audio. So I don't know if it's the mic or just the radio or my sexy voice. K2BAR, K2DSL.
Now there's an oxymoron. Very good. Well, I use the DX cartridge on my ProSet most of the time. My ProSet or ProSet Plus. But very good. Anybody else have microphone or headset preferences, please call K2BAR.
K2JK.
Mr. Don, go right ahead.
Okay, I use the microphone that came with the FT840. It's an MH1 microphone, just a hand microphone. For a headset here, I'm using a Sony Walkman headset. However, the blind cord that comes out of that thing was garbage. So what I have done is I have taken speaker wire. I pulled the headsets apart, took out the garbage wire that came with it with their stupid plug, and I wired it to the ran wire to the headset using speaker wire, and pulled it, having the speaker wire apart, I soldered speaker wire into the headset itself, so it had a good piece of substantial wire, and a quarter inch mono plug at the other end which actually goes into a audio filter, which is for CW, and then from there into the radio. Well, you have added in there, between the one headset and the wire, a reversing switch that can reverse the polarity of the phasing of the what's coming into the one ear. So you get, it sounds like it's coming right into the middle of your head when you listen to it. I think I'll have such a simple arrangement on their headsets. But I just did mine with a simple little double throw switch, a little miniature switch mounted on the headphone. So that's what I'm using here. Back to net, W2JK.
Isn't that interesting? Good. Anybody else want to chime in? Well, I did want to mention one other thing. When I'm listening to two radios and I have some audio switching between the two radios, if I want to drive the audio for the microphone to, you know, transmit on one radio to the other, I have 2-foot switches that are mounted to a board, and I can switch either the left or the right radio to transmit and project the other receiver, which is very good. Works very, very well. So, anyway. All right, I got to go back to Tom. Tom, did you have any follow-on you'd like to make?
No, that was great. I appreciate everybody's comments. Thank you again. K2BAR, KV2ESE, back to that.
Tom, just a point. You probably would like to probably borrow someone's ProSet. And, you know, you sound like a soft-spoken guy, and if you're trying to work DX, you really probably want the DX cartridge. Okay? Yeah, I hope you got that. Yeah, you really want to try out the DX cartridge. Very good. W2JEK, your comment, sir.
Okay, this is W2JEK. Last week I had mentioned that I had acquired a K radio model 128 radio and telegraph receiver, which is a 5-tube regenerative receiver, and it, I was looking for manual information, and I got one on from Joe Meek, gave me a site, and I'm going to give you the call sign on the guy in a minute here. It's called Call Bugs. I want to get to the guy's call as soon as I find that information. And he had about 22 pages of instructions on it, and and wound up with most of the schematic diagram, except the actual, had everything else, but, oh yeah, here it is, W7 Elf Echo Kilo Bravo, W7 Echo Kilo Bravo. You look up under Glowbooks, and he's got several different items there that he has manuals available on the website. So, that might be of interest to somebody. Incidentally, I've got this thing running, and I've logged a number of those aircraft beacons as, and I've gotten as far away as Puerto Rico and the Bahamas and Alberta, Canada, and North Carolina. I mentioned some up in Canada and this is a local area as well, so working pretty well. Back to net, W2JK.
Okay, very good. Anybody want to follow up? Okay, Noel, your really, really good question. K2BAR.
Okay, does anybody remember the MaxCom antennas, which were basically a high value 50 ohm resistor, is the dipole antenna? With a basically one-to-one bounce so that you wouldn't get any current on the feed line. And recent articles, some have found them to be amazing. Truly a dream to work with. They had some good reviews. I couldn't believe it. So if you took, as you know, mobile antennas are very difficult, but for instance, the screwdriver antenna is notoriously difficult to ground properly to the vehicle. It's rather expensive. The efficiency, if you're on a good day, it might be 5%. So, anyways, I'm thinking of taking basically a 4-to-1 balance, running about 20 feet of wire, and putting a loop around the motorhome, and running a 100-ohm resistor. Think I'll get any action on that?
Alrighty. Anybody want to follow up? Sorry, I missed the half of the question. Are you talking about that thing with the resistor in it, Noel?
Well, the original MaxCom had the resistor at the feed point. I wanted to do a loop, but of course my loops are way too short. So I'm going to put the resistor opposite the feed point, the 150 ohm one.
And what, a 3-to-1 balance to feed it?
4-to-1. It just happened to be 150 ohms, the only one I had.
Don't use a 4-to-1 balance. Use a current balance, a 1-to-1 current balance. And make the wire as long as you can. And make the resistor about a 200-ohm non-inductive resistor. There's an antenna called the T2FD that's built that way. Also, if you've got a tuner, you might experiment with that the resistor.
which will, you know, help you get a match, but waste a lot of your power. So you may want to try to make that even higher.
Ah, yes, but 200 ohm ones I bought have wire in them, and the only one I have that's non-inductive, that's ceramic, is 150 ohm. It's what I have, and I'm leaving Sunday.
Use the non-inductive wire wound ones. You're going to use a tuner anyway. You'll just subtract out the reactants that they put in. Not a problem.
What's the best place around here to buy 25 foot of 8X or 58 with PL259Ns?
Yes, the guy in Lodi, he would probably be good right off the get Route 80. Is that Lodi? I think so.
Well, question, how much power do you intend to run through that?
Oh, I don't know. My 520 puts out 100 watts on a good day.
Yeah, okay, you can do that. I mean, he sells, by and large, nylon connectors. Even if they're gold-plated, they're usually nylon, not Teflon, so that was the rationale for my question. That's fine.
KC2SQV.
We know you. Welcome aboard, James. Will you have a question or a comment later in the net?
Possibly. I just turned the radio on, but for now I'll be listening.
Okie doke. Welcome aboard. By the way, that's one of those TYT radios, the monobanders that he's using. That sound, or is it, James? We're using mom's radio.
That's affirmative. I'm using my TYT. It's a nice little toy. You only got FM on this, but yeah, it's a nice little thing. Part 90 and 95 approved, which is what I need. Once this little local competition's over, I can go back to my ambulance corps and get that. Once I get the frequencies all set up, the input and the output, that's always a challenge to get those all taken care of. Know there's some people who know how to do it, but it's always a challenge. Yep, but yeah, that's what I'm using. I just didn't want to get up. It's always a challenge.
Yeah, there we get up. It's got nice audio. I've never actually heard it. Very good. Okay, back to Noel's question. Noel, what was? I'm sorry, I lost my place. That's what I was going to think about. Oh well. I'm sorry, Jim was pointing out that you could use a resistor. Blah blah blah. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just not a big fan of throwing a resistor across my feed point. It just doesn't work for me. Jim, help me understand why I would want to do that as opposed to just using a tuner and letting the tuner do the work.
This is K2ZO. Well, the problem is you get such complex impedances that it's not going to work very well, the tuner. So by throwing away a little bit of your power, you bring the tuning into a range where this will work. And that's, believe it or not, done with some military antennas, which are used for quick, mobile, quick and dirty operation, throw it up. And they actually do have an antenna that works on all bands. And, you eat up some of your RF, but you get out. You know, losing 3 dB is not a big deal. When it means getting through or not being able to transmit because the radio cuts back.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, there is that. Okay. Very good. Well, what was the rest of your question?
So, I have those line isolators. I was wondering if Jim wanted me to use that. It's called the RadioWorks Light Isolator. Would that work better than a 4-to-1?
First of all, the impedance is not going to be anywhere near a match for the 4-1, okay? So don't even worry about that. Yes, use the line isolator. Stick the line isolator in the line somewhere to keep the RF from going crazy. And you can put it up top or stick it down at the bottom. Probably be better if you try to put it up top, and it'll keep the RF off the feed line and out of the radio. But the line isolator will work fine for you as a current balance. And then try, and if you're going to make a loop, and if it doesn't work, make a double loop, okay? And you may find that will work.
And Jim, by a double loop, you mean two parallel loops sharing a feed point, or do you mean literally a corkscrew?
Being wrap it around and bring it so that you have twice the amount of wire in the same physical space.
Okay, like a corkscrew, make a big spiral so just, have it wrap underneath. It's not two parallel lines sharing a feed point, but one super long length that just bypasses the feed point at one point and it takes another lap around the yard.
I did that around the apartment, and it worked great.
Okay. Way back to what, in 1962?
Yeah, that's about right.
I was paying attention last time you talked about that, and other escapades of that genre. Very good. Okay. In 1952, my parents had potty trained me, and they were working on the bedwetting. Anyway, oh dear me, don't mind me. All right, I'm being incorrigible. All right, anybody else have a comment they want to add before I hand it back to Noel on this antenna?
And when will the bedwetting cease?
Oh, aren't you just a funny guy? I guess the right answer is that depends.
They're still working on it, KC2 SUV.
Hey, no one asked you. Hey, Jim, maybe you were right. It was better when your children don't have ham licenses. Okay, Noel?
No, I just read the eHam reviews of the MaxCom. Somebody gave it a 5 out of 5.
Because it's eHam.
100% solid-state construction. No moving parts to break or wear out. No expensive relays.
Everybody, do you know what the 505 over 5 means? It means I can find nothing to disappoint me in my purchase. It does not mean it's a 5-level performer. It's just a not a 100% level. It actually, it's the reciprocal of a 100% disappointment.
You took BK with a comment?
Yes, Don.
I remember there was an article in QST a couple of years back. The guy worked all over the world with a 100. His antenna was a 150-watt light bulb right at the base, mounted in this porcelain base, mounted on a post outside of his house. And right at that point, he had a balun connected to it, and from there a coax. So that, and the balun there, so that the coax would not be doing the radiating, but the 150-watt light bulb would. I think he was doing this mostly on 10 meters, but I think he worked all continents and I don't know how many countries. You know, everything works to a... It says anything works, I think it was the title of the article. And, it's amazing what you can actually get on the air with. I mean, people have loaded up bed springs and window frames and random wires of various kinds and have made contact with them. Not as good as a dipole halfway above the ground, but they make contacts. So, That stuff does happen. However it works out for you with your tuner there, Noel, I guess that, you know, it's just something you can experiment with and see what happens and find the best configuration for you. Back to that, W2JK.
That's pretty marvelous. I like that. All right. Noel, do you have anything more you'd like to add?
Yes, there's one advantage. On a cold winter night, all I have to do is drop the resistor maybe 6 inches lower, but two wires through the roof of the fiberglass roof, and I have two problems solved: automatic antenna matching and vehicle heat while I'm sitting there working the world.
Yeah, okay. Very fine. Very fine. I like that. All right. Anything else? All righty. Any other check-ins for the net? Please call K2BAR.
TJ4WG Mobile. Rachel, no comments, no questions.
Evening, Rachel. Welcome aboard. And I'll add you into the Lasta. And let's see. The hell is my roster? I took a nice roster for tonight's net. And oh, my cursor is giving me grief. I see what's happening here. My computer's just being a little sluggish, moving around. No big deal. All right, there we go. AJ4WD. All right. Now, I'm going to draw people's... Oh, no, we have one more question. Then I have something I want to draw their attention to. You might want to break out your November QST and take a gander at page 36, 37, 38, and 39. It's not so much what that project is, what it could be, although it is pretty kind of cool. So, with that in mind, let's see. Mr. John, your question and your comment, AB2XT, K2BAR.
KBR, this is 82XT. The comment is simply that last week we were talking about the Comcast box thing and some people have to go over the air to get Fox. I was just pointing out that there's a guy who was listening to the Limark TechNet one time in Long Island, and there's a guy there that does EXing with one of these over the air boxes. He found a little bit of a tower and a rotator, and he's picking up TV stations in the north and about out to the Mississippi River. So some people are having some fun with them, and that's the equivalent of DX, that kind of equipment.
Well, sure, it's VHF or UHF. It's a lot of fun. And in fact, there was a 2-meter opening. I missed it, but just a week or two ago, that was just horrendously wonderful. There's another one about a month ago that was also good. Yeah, good point. And what was your question?
The question was simple. I was curious if anybody's got some good tips on removing the dual inline surface mount integrated surface.
Removing, as in desoldering?
Right, you are.
And the solder braid is too big, I guess. I've seen it done with solder braid, but it's very scary because when you heat up the second side, you really need to have a pair of tweezers on the device in order to pick it up so it doesn't go flying.
Yeah, I've seen stuff in electronic labs where there would be very nice little U-shaped soldering tips, and it touches both sides, and as soon as it's hot enough, it'll stay hot long enough for you to go in with the tweezers. Pop it right off. It's really simple. At home, I'm looking for something. I don't know, maybe somebody's ever cobbled something up with a U-shaped piece of copper wire or something. Just wondering.
You could take a standard stout tip and
you know, if you're good with a Dremel motor tool, you could fashion your own, you know, slotted tip like you were describing fairly easily. I wouldn't want to do it with a cutoff wheel, but that's another a little. That'd be too big with a. It might be too big with a cutoff wheel, but a Dremel motor tool with a grinding bit on the end might be just fine, or cutting wheel. Anybody have any experience with that? Sorry, Mr. John.
Okay, I'll just have to go back to the drawing board. This is 82X2, back to you.
Well, John, do you have a Dremel motor tool?
Yes, I do have one. So, I'll think about what you're talking about. You're talking maybe out of a piece of copper or something, make a U-shaped thing we did.
Yeah, you might even consider just getting a stouter tip, cutting it flat, and then slotting it like you were describing to wrap around the surface mass of ice, which is not too big, and that way they can heat both sides. You can just, you know, get ready with a pair of tweezers and lift the soldering iron and just lift up the device real quick before it cools.
Yeah, I was just curious if there's some other kind of thing, like maybe a heat gun or something, maybe somebody used that with, where you can get, once you get a, you know, slippery slide, you can just pull them off of it.
Yeah, well, I think you'd be reasonably quick. I think it'd be worth trying. What you may want to do, if you have the real estate, and most of the boards do, instead of doing it straight up and down, do the slot on a slant so you can get in there really quickly with the tweezers and hold the soldering iron on an angle to both sides of the device, you know, to get both pads. That might be more comfortable and more efficient for me, you know, how to get the soldering iron out of the way and apply the tweezers in the way quickly, viewpoint.
Yeah, comment.
Hold some of that stuff over. Back to that.
Rachel, go ahead.
You could use a very fine angled dentist tool, and you could use that to lift one side of the vise, and then you can use your tweezers on the other side.
John, what do you think?
It's okay to bend it a little, they won't break off. Bend one side.
Are you trying to just salvage this thing? This K2ZO, do you care about the board?
I don't care about the board. I would want the part.
Okay. What I do is, this is K2ZO. I have a heat gun, okay? I have a heat gun that gets very hot, and it works quite well. And what I do is I just put a device, something thin, that I can lift it. Don't want to do too hard because it's going to go flying. And my heat gun will easily melt the solder. And believe it or not, the device doesn't care about the heat. And I blast it with the heat gun and pop right off. Works every time. I even take stuff that's dual inline, stuff with pins that's soldered into a board, and I take it out that way.
Do you give me a tip on what that thing's called or what it's, what the brand is?
If you look at the industrial quality heat guns, you'll see that you can buy one that goes to 750 degrees. That's what this is.
You might also want to get a nozzle.
They do have nozzles that go on them. But yeah, this will take it. No problem at all.
Okay, so that's the same temperature as the normal soldering tip would have been. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Well, that's a winner, too. I'll take a look at that. Thank you very much.
He says we're just full of hot air. Anyway, anybody else have any follow-ons for desoldering surface mount or other wonderful components?
K2ETN, I have a question for everybody, however.
Andy, go right ahead. Good evening, folks.
I bought another computer, and it came with Windows 7, and I discovered that most of my programs, in fact, all but one, will not work on a 64-bit system, only a 32-bit.